Good morning and welcome to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio, at Ed Says CT on Twitter and Ed Says at talkofconnecticut.com. On today's show, we will talk about the current state of political discourse, the conversation, and how we can change it. Cybersecurity expert Keith Barthold will join us and talk about smart TVs listening in on you, and I'll ask him about other devices as well. The possibility of driverless cars in Connecticut. We'll have a legislative update here in the state. Racism, blight, and politics. Plus, we'll look at Trump's trying again on immigration. But first, I want to talk about the rise and fall of Milo. Milo Yiannopoulos, we have seen in the news more so than usual the past few days, if not weeks. He was on with Bill Maher, and now he has resigned from Breitbart over controversy regarding comments he had made in two different video sessions, one on the Joe Rogan Experience and another in a group chat video, where he basically described his experience as a young man, and he said his way of coping as being a victim was to make jokes. And but he went in with the argument that children develop differently, and at 13 for him, he was, at least in the video that came out, he was able to realize in his mind that he could make his own decisions, and that this relationship he had with an older man when he's a 13-year-old boy, in his mind, was healthy for him when he made these comments. Now, he seems to have backtracked on that. And it just, it made me wonder what the line is. Obviously, a 13-year-old, we have laws for a reason. A 13-year-old is not capable of having an adult relationship. And Milo went out on great length to explain that almost a mentor-type relationship with the man and himself as a boy. And those are the two distinctions, man and boy, man and child, adult and child. I don't care if it's an adult male or an adult female, and either or on the other end. If it's a adult and a child, it is wrong, it is illegal, and he is the victim. And in his statement, which he gave, he acknowledged that, saying, "I am a gay man and a child abuse victim," saying that two men touched him when he shouldn't have, one of them being a priest between the ages of 13 and 16. He says, "Looking back, I can see the effects it had on me," saying black comedy, gallows humor, and love of shock value stayed with him as he started focusing on work. And he said, "I reviewed the tapes that appeared last night in their proper full context, and I don't believe they say what is being reported." Milo looking to victimize himself yet again, in my opinion. He came out against those who sexually abuse minors, as he should. But then he does turn his attention to the media. And he focuses on their choosing to focus on what he's saying. He says, "I haven't ever," and the thing that caught me was, "I haven't ever apologized before." Milo made his name being a provocateur, saying things that upset people and profiting from it. And now it has led to his downfall. But really sticks out to me, what really sticks out to me is him saying, "I haven't ever apologized before." Well, that's a problem. Because nobody does anything for which they shouldn't apologize. Nobody makes it through a day without probably having to say sorry about that at least once. Something as minor as bumping into someone getting off the elevator. Or even this morning, I got an email saying I screwed something up. It's easy. Sorry. That was my fault. Accept responsibility. It's not hard. But Milo apparently had never done it before. Saying name-calling doesn't bother me. But to be the victim of child abuse and for the media to call me an apologist for child abuse is absurd. He then says, "I regret the things I said. I don't think I've been as sorry about anything in my whole life. This isn't how I wanted my parents to find out about this." He then goes on to say, "This is a cynical media witch hunt from people who don't care about children. They care about destroying me and my career and by extension, my allies." So here's the thing. It has nothing to do with his career or his allies. It has to do with accountability. And this is, I want you to look up the word deflection. I want you to write the word deflection on a post-it and put it somewhere where you can see it at all times. Because it is the word of the century right now. Nobody is able to accept responsibility. I get it. Milo was a victim. But even in his own words, he didn't feel it. He felt that as a 13-year-old, he was capable, more capable than his contemporaries, of being involved in that relationship. And that's not true. It's just not true. He might think so. I thought at that age, and even maybe a little older, that I knew more than I did. But that's not the case. That is why we have the laws that we do. But for him to, after profiting all this time on his opinions and his comments, as controversial as they are, for him to turn around and to say, oh, no, poor me, the media is trying to make this about me, I can't abide by it. I guess it's you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And this is outside of the abuse he suffered. This is as him as an adult making decisions regarding his career and what he chose to cover. And he has made money off it. He was had a $250,000 book deal. And it came back to bite him. It's fleeting. It happens to a lot of people. But I certainly don't shed a tear for him on the business side. When it comes to what happened to him personally as a child, absolutely. No kid should be put through that. 888-574-2723. Let's go to Tom in West Hartford. Good morning, Tom.
Yeah, hi, Ed. How you doing?
Doing all right. What's up?
Yeah, just to make sure about something. Is this thing going to come through with the minimum wage by the year 2022? It's going to be $15 an hour?
Well, I am actually hitting the legislative update at 11, but... Let me pull up what I have here, because I do have some of the... Where did it go? Here we go. Proposed legislation, death penalty bills. One of two Connecticut minimum wage bills squeak through committee. The Senate bill to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2022 failed on a split vote.
So it's not going to go through then, right?
Well, the House bill passed by the Labor and Public Employees Committee... by a slim margin after an hour of debate. So it's still up in the air.
Because the reason, my concern is, like, I'm 62, I'm collecting Social Security right now. You know, I'm collecting Social Security right now, and I talk to Social Security people, and it says, like, you can't go above anything above $16,920 a year. I'm just working part-time now.
Right.
And I'm living on this. I'm not doing bad. I'm, you know, a little comfortable. But I'm thinking, well, geez, if it goes up to like that much in the year 2022, I must well get a full-time job later on, you know.
Well, I mean, if it's going to benefit you as an employee, are you an hourly employee?
Yeah, I am. I'm just working part-time. And what I'm saying is, like I said before, like, in other words, I'll put it this way. If I gross above $326 a week, I won't get my social payments every month. But if I gross less than that, I can get my payments every month, work part-time. But if they start raising the minimum wage, I know it sounds funny because raising the minimum wage is a good thing, but they raise it too much, I might as well get a full-time job then later on, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know how it will affect you if you'd be grandfathered in and exempt from those things. That's all in the devil's in the details. It's all, and that's the thing that these legislators have to keep in mind. Making sweeping changes like this is one thing, but there is always a domino effect.
Yeah. That's...
But I'll keep you up to date as I learn more about it.
Because, you know, the way I'm thinking, I'm 62 now, and I can work part-time, but then what am I supposed to do at 67? Now look for a full-time job at 67, you know.
Yeah, so can I ask you, Tom, it's a personal question. What, you're, is 62 young for being on Social Security?
No. The way it is, like, you get your full... Social Security payment at 66.
Right.
But I mean, my financial situation, I couldn't wait till I was 66. I mean,
okay.
I gotta start getting some money in now. I know when I get to be 66, I won't get that full Social Security benefit, though.
Okay.
It'll just be a partial payment.
So that's the thing, I'm a few years away from it, so I haven't really thought about it. And I worry that there won't be anything for me anyway. So I just wonder. And hell, by the time I'm ready to collect, they might have moved the minimum age up to 70 at that point.
Well, who knows the way things are going on. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, Tom, good luck. Thank you for the call. And as I said, as I learn more, I will let you know. 888-574-2723. We're talking about, we're talking about minimum wage being raised and Social Security there with Tom. But I started talking off with Milo Yiannopoulos, who has left Breitbart, resigned his position after the video controversy. And this idea of being provocative, of being edgy, of being crass, of just being on the fringe, extreme one way or the other, of that being what sells, of that being the norm. And perhaps we are to blame as an audience. And I want to look at that next and see what we can do to change the dialogue when it comes to just politics and life in general, these conflicting ideologies. It's become so heated, and it's not necessary. We'll talk about that next here on Ed Says. Let's go right to the phones. We got Bob in Enfield talking Social Security. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ed. How you doing?
Doing all right.
Ed, you know, the stories that you hear about Social Security today, when I started working in 67, they were the same stories. Of course, then you couldn't collect to your 65. During that time, they changed it to 62. And when I got 62, I could make a decision if I wanted to collect or wait till I'm 65. Or I did the math. I started collecting at 62. The break-even point at that time was 77 years. You have to work you have to live to 77 before you start losing money. In other words, if you waited till 65, you lose those 3 years. And those
right.
3 years made a big difference in your Social Security collection. But I don't think they're ever going to change it. The fund is very well funded. They have to change the ceiling. So, and I've never paid taxes, and I've been working even collecting Social Security.
So I wonder, so you just said they got to raise the ceiling. Do you mean the contribution or the age?
Well, the amount of money that you make, it used to be $45,000 when I was working. After that, you didn't contribute to it. Now it's $125,000, I think. All you have to do is raise it to 250, and there won't be any problems as far as funding is concerned.
Yeah, there's been talk about that as well. My wife has actually said as an accountant, she says that's something that they should definitely do. So I defer to her on those sorts of things. But I do wonder if they will raise the age as well. As you mentioned, 62 and 65. I wonder as, you know, time goes, I've got a few years before I'm there, if they will, because we are living longer and we are working longer. And I wonder if those things will change.
Well, you know, there's a guy that works at Walmart in East Windsor. He works at the door. He's like security. He checks your bags and all that stuff. And he was a foreman at Pratt Whitney. He's very well. He has a retirement from Pratt. He has Social Security. His wife worked there. They have double retirement. So they're collecting four checks a month, and they still work at Walmart. She's a cashier, and he's at Social Security. I says, why are you working? You don't need to work. He says, well, we've got nothing else to do. He says, I'm enjoying this. I talk with the people. He's like a PR guy for Walmart. I mean, he loves what he's doing. So
I can't argue with that. I'm not cut from that same cloth. Maybe it's because I spent time already in the service industry. I did my time there. Everybody goes, if you got rich tomorrow, wouldn't you keep working? I was like, no, I would find ways to fill my time doing nothing.
Well, if I won the lottery, I would work with charities. I would try to help people. That's
I don't dispute that. I would probably do it monetarily rather than personal involvement. I would try to travel, that's for sure. Well, Bob, thank you for the call. 888-574-2723. You know what? I was just daydreaming about the lottery, too, because I think I thought I saw somewhere it's up to like 450 million. I don't know. I just saw a blip of it because I don't play. I don't check it. But then, you know, you start to daydream. You know, what would you do? Would I keep doing this show? And part of me is like, yeah, I would cut back. I just do this show. I would tell them, hey, I'm not going to do the other things, but if you want me to continue to do the show, I would. And then, you know, I start daydreaming about what I do with the house. Or I don't want to move. I like where I live. And what I would do with the car. I would get a sweet minivan loaded. It would be amazing. 888-574-2723. The past two calls actually illustrate what I was going to talk about, was this idea of this, the current climate when it comes to disagreeing, or even people like Milo Yiannopoulos and even the Bill O'Reillys of the world, or, you know, the people we have seen change from who they were to, you know, over at the Blaze, it was established. Glenn Beck was just, you know, frothing at the mouth, angry, and now he is mellowed a little bit. And I don't know if it comes with age or if it came with lagging financials. But this idea that everybody has to dig their heels in and there's no quarter given and there's no real discussion, everything's so polarizing, I don't know if that's necessarily healthy. And I guess it's always been like this, but I don't know if it should be. I don't know if we should be idolizing the Bill Maher's on one side and the Milo's on the other. You know, I think there is room for real discussion. And where I plant my flag, I guess, is as long as what you're doing doesn't harm anyone else, 90% of the time I'm probably going to be like, cool. Now, how you define harm is probably where we'll differ. But everybody throws around tags like liberal and, you know, conservative and all these other things and variations of them as insults when it's not necessarily. Let's go to Danielle in West Hartford. Good morning, Danielle. How's it going?
I'm doing well, and I know you are, too. I just want to reiterate something I've said before, because I think it needs to be said. You are the only talk show on that station that really is reasonable and reasoning and rational and everything good. I wonder if any of the other people, guys they are, who would ever listen to you, they could learn something from you.
We are all very, very cordial to each other and very polite, and I have fans in both of them, I believe. While we might not agree, now, when you talk about the syndicated stuff, I would say that probably Michael Savage and I will never see eye to eye.
Oh,
that's
I
for
don't
sure.
blame you for that. But, you know, I just tuned in, and I don't want to get you in any trouble or anything, for the last 5 minutes of the show preceding you, and I could not believe some of the things I heard in just that very short time. It's just unbelievable. I called in and left a message to Christian to give to the certain person that we are not in Nazi Germany yet. You know?
Well, I did not actually catch what was said, but I appreciate the compliments, as always, Danielle. There are those who listen who think you're related to me because you're so kind when you call.
Not only as a human to a human, and I try to be fair, and I am not an insincere person, and I am not going overboard either. So you just keep what you're doing, and I give you credit, because the thing that precedes you, some announcement is for Savage, I think, and it doesn't seem, it's so totally incongruous with you.
Well, I appreciate the call and the compliments. 888-574-2723 is the number. Up next, cybersecurity. Keith Barthold on smart TVs, possibly listening in on your conversations in your home. Oh, what have you been up to? That's next. Welcome back to Ed Says here on The Talk of Connecticut. In just a moment, we should be speaking with cybersecurity expert Keith Barthold on smart TVs that could be listening in on you and your family in your living room. Big brother, and you brought them in. Breaking news out of Tweed, New Haven Airport, as there is a report of a crash, a plane at the end of the runway, as emergency recruits are responding to the report of that crash. Unknown at the time, this time, if there are any injuries. This coming from the New Haven Register. Emergency radio reports indicate there are two people on board a small training plane. Apparently, the Coast Guard is out taking a look at things as well. So as we have more information, I will keep you updated on that. Have you purchased a new TV anytime recently? Maybe one of those smart TVs. If there is a Samsung smart TV in your home, there is a chance it could be listening to your every word, as Samsung has confirmed that their smart TVs do such a thing. Joining us now is cybersecurity expert Keith Barthold. Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing well.
So, I just went to a big box store last week, bought myself a Samsung Smart TV. We'll put it at the 60-inch range. Not too big, but big enough. What are my concerns if I am a consumer?
Yeah, so on these Samsung TVs, when you hit the button on your remote to activate the voice features so that you can, you know, tell it to change channels or pause TV, the issue is that they are sending that information to a third party. Now, they would not initially release who that third party was, and we all assumed that it was a marketing group. It turns out that it's Nuance. It is a voice translation company that's just taking that information, turning it into commands, and sending it back to the TV.
So it seems somewhat harmless, right?
It does. You know, on the surface, I mean, it's not designed to take your conversations and use that for marketing purposes. However, you know, what's to stop these companies from doing that? And, you know, it brings up other questions, like if I've got an Amazon Echo or, you know, most of the phones now are listening and waiting for a trigger word like, okay, Google, or, you know, Siri, and apologize to your listeners for setting off all of their phones right then, but, you know, they're buffering and listening for that keyword, and then they're transmitting information afterwards, but, you know, what's to stop a hacker from setting that up to where it listens constantly, or someone taking advantage of that process, kind of going outside of the bounds of their privacy policy?
Right, and I don't want to steer this into a political conversation too much, but there are concerns about Donald Trump and his Android device, because it's been shown, as you said, that a hacker can remotely access all of the whether it's the microphone or the camera of these devices without the knowledge of the user. And with him using it to tweet, and who knows where it's present, it could be a serious security breach, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's interesting when you see pictures of Mark Zuckerberg at his desk that there's a black piece of electrical tape on his camera and his microphone is covered on his laptop. That should tell you something, that there's a real concern that, you know, our privacy is being infringed on.
Yeah, and is that something you would suggest? Because I do it on my laptop. If you have a laptop, and I'm not even a big deal. Like, I don't know why I do it. Who's going to... One of my neighbors wants to spy on what I'm doing at my desk. I don't know. But I still do it. And that's a concern for things like the Xbox One. I believe they have the voice activation, and the same thing could happen there. And Germany is dealing with this now with a doll called My Friend Kayla that apparently is listening too well. Are you aware of that one?
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
It's the regulators there say the toy is essentially a stealthy espionage device that shares what it hears and is also vulnerable to takeover by third parties. How much do you think the public is not educated enough in this, and they are just taking unnecessary risks?
You know, I think we just have to be aware of what we're surrounding ourselves with, and that the definition of privacy it starts to narrow as we give manufacturers an opportunity to really invade our privacy. You know, as an example, these TVs, most of the smart TVs today, you have to opt out of the options to take your viewing habits and prevent those from being sold to third parties. So certainly we've seen where, you know, anything that you Google may show up in an ad later on. If you're shopping on Amazon for truck parts, then you're going to get bombarded with those ads.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a matter of time until the same thing happens on your smart TV. You watch a documentary on motorcycles, and boom, Harley is bombarding you with ads. If that's not already happening, it's on its way soon.
And when it comes to these things, I mean, I would say the average person, say they get a phone, they just turn it on and go. I'm definitely not average in my use. I turn off my GPS when it's not in use, when I don't need it. I don't use Wi-Fi in the workplace. I turn off, you know, the Bluetooth when it's not in use. And those are vulnerable points of access for these things, and I just don't think that the average user either knows or cares how vulnerable they are and how much of our lives are actually on these devices and how susceptible they are to being hacked.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's really about that awareness that you are leaving yourself vulnerable, and conveniences of voice control and the computer in your pocket, you create some risk and you sacrifice privacy in return for that convenience.
So as a cybersecurity analyst, what are some things you recommend people do on the regular, whether it is turning off certain parts of the device, transmitters or receivers, or changing passwords? What are some things that the average user who doesn't have that kind of insight, you would suggest that they do?
I think, first off, having a good firewall in your home, and certainly from a business standpoint, my company, DKB Innovative, and that's part of what we do is put security in place to protect businesses and healthcare entities. From a home standpoint, making sure you have a good quality firewall in place that is going to help mitigate risk of ransomware and of malware coming in and controlling these devices, because they are hackable.
And how does somebody know if they even have a firewall? Somebody, is Windows Defender enough, or is it something that's built into their router?
No, it's not. Having a good, reputable router and firewall, a name brand, that will take security updates and actively update itself to the latest threats, very important. And that's, as you get more and more internet connected devices, more things connecting to Wi-Fi, it's important to have just the right security measures in place, and also being careful with passwords, the changing passwords, using different passwords. If you use the same password on your bank account as you do for Facebook, Amazon and your email, it only takes one password hack until you're completely compromised.
And when it comes to passwords like that, are you amazed at how many people don't put passwords, say, on either their Wi-Fi networks at home or even their phones? They don't use the fingerprint or the number or even the design on Android, that people are just so lackadaisical about it?
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. And, if you've got email on your phone, you should have security set up to where you require a password. Otherwise, somebody grabs your phone, they can get into your email. If they can get into your email, there's a lot of things they can get into, including bank accounts and access to other private information, and really some serious identity theft.
Cybersecurity analyst Keith Barthold, thank you so much for your time, sir. Have a wonderful afternoon, and keep those devices safe.
All right, thanks so much.
888-574-2723, the number into the studio, at Ed Says CT on Twitter, and the email edsays@talkofconnecticut.com. It blows my mind. I have a friend who does IT stuff, and he enjoys finding open networks and then sending images to the printer to be printed. Most of the time it's Nicolas Cage, a photo of Nicolas Cage saying something to the effect of use a password. He's doing a public service when he finds these things. It's one thing to have a guest access, which should limit things, but take the time. A lot of times it's easier just to turn the thing on and go with it. I'm sure I could update some of my security settings. I think I've actually got an email saying that my router has a firmware update, and it's just been sitting there because, honestly, I can't remember the password to get into my router because I did change the default. And if I have to reset it, then I got to go through that whole thing. And I should have written it down somewhere, but I didn't want somebody to find it. But who's going to find it? Like, who's going to look for it? Just absurd. So now I have to just wait it out. And then he started talking about having different passwords. And I'm like, oh, I just had to change the one password, and I don't remember what it is. And then you have to go through the click on the link, don't remember your password, what's your username, and all these security questions. It's a lot of work. I know. But it's necessary, unless you want to end up with empty bank accounts and somebody being privy to your entire life. Because let's face it, our entire lives are on our phones, whether it's apps to our bank accounts or bookmarks in our browser, two accounts, mortgages or other bank accounts, and don't even get into the gallery. Like, some of you probably have some things on your photo roll that you don't want people to see ever. Or maybe you do if you're freaky like that. But people trust these devices so much. And if they get into the wrong hands, bad things can happen. Driverless cars, they're coming. It's the future. You can get where you're going and continue to do things. And by do things, I mean sit on your phone, watch YouTube, and text, which seems to be what everybody does. But this coming from the CT Post, Connecticut trying to position itself as the next frontier in driverless cars, which have been pioneered by Uber, Google, Tesla, and Ford. But apparently the state will have to change its motor vehicle statutes and modernize them to clear up who is considered an operator. Governor Malloy saying, I think Connecticut should try to be at the lead of this when talking about driverless cars. Lead of this, but we're not going to be at the lead of weed. Can't we do both? Excuse me. I get worked up when he's like, we've done enough there. Just do it already. But let's focus on the cars. Arizona and Pittsburgh already doing these things. California, though, suspending their driverless car program in December after a video emerged of the vehicles running red lights in San Francisco. That was blamed on human error. I don't really know how that goes. But Malloy says tech firms are eager to get started here in Connecticut. Didn't identify the companies, but says Hartford and Stamford have been named as possible right-sized cities for experimentation. So why not be ahead of the curve as opposed to behind the curve? Well, that's what I've been saying about everything. About these cars, about weed. Again, I digress. So they are looking, there's a bill that's been introduced that would create a task force to look into the potential impact of autonomous vehicles on the state and the automobile industry here. Well, here's the thing. Free market, we always keep talking about it. Free market, if the auto industry goes the way of the dodo, at least the way we know it, and we go to driverless cars, I mean, those are still purchases that will need to be made. But we can't just hold their hand through this. The future is coming, and we need to figure it out. Now, Leon, State Senator Carlo Leon of Stamford, saying, I see a lot of problems if we don't do it right, saying it could be efficient but could cause a lot of disruptions. So the question is whether or not Connecticut should make the steps to welcoming driverless cars. How do you feel about driverless cars on the city or in your cities? Stamford and Hartford, targeted locations. Office of Policy and Management will have to figure out the language that would regulate these cars, working with other agencies. Tony Boucher saying this would be an incredible boon to the elderly and those whose mobility is impaired. Think about it. Don't drink and drive. I agree. The other thing is the questions are also raised by Boucher, is what happens with ice and snow when your wheels no longer have control of the car? And that is one of the questions that comes up. What decision does a driverless car make? Is it better to crash into you or avoid crashing into you and perhaps hit a pedestrian? What decision does it make? Or if there's two sets of pedestrians in the walkway, let's say there's three on one side and four on the other, you know, and the car is going to hit someone. Does it take out the three rather than the four? But what if a child is among the three? These are all questions that a driverless car would probably have to answer. Now, hopefully a driverless car wouldn't be in an accident. But the question is, where is it going to put its priority? If you are a passenger in a car, your automatic assumption when you get in is that the operator of the vehicle is trying to keep everyone in the car safe. And I'm sure that expectation would be extended to driverless cars. But if a driverless car comes along a scenario where it has to evade something, and the only way to evade it a kid chasing a ball into the street, is by plowing the car into a building with potential harm to its occupants. How do you program the car to do that? How do you, what side are you on? As the passenger, are you first priority? Or should it be pedestrians? Where do you write the code for these cars? And these are questions that have to be answered, and I'm sure are going to have to be legislated. Like, they're going to have to be worked into the laws governing them. Again, I am all for it. And the question is, not only will you have, if you have driverless cars on the road, they have to deal with human beings who are dangerously unpredictable. You should probably be able to predict what a driverless car is going to do. Hopefully the safest thing ever. But what about they follow lines on the road? We've seen how some lines fade. They got to deal with detours. And I like this one. Knowing whether or not it's a puddle or it's a deep sinkhole. 888-574-2723. Let's go to Frank in Watertown. Good morning, Frank.
Morning, Ed. You know, maybe it's going to be the thing of the future, but I think there were two new into the process with this be coming into the individual states. I would say against it. What happens if that car wipes out three or four people in a something malfunctions and it runs over, kills two or three pedestrians? Who's at fault? The state for letting it in? The computer people? The car people? The supposed driver, no driver that's in the vehicle? Who eats that situation? Is there criminal liability in that case? Is it because if the computer causes it, or the car malfunctions, or the person takes it over? I mean, where do you go for liability purposes?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm talking about, is that they'll have to figure all that out. But you're right. I mean, my phone crashes twice a day sometimes. What happens if the car... I mean, I'm sure they built in all sorts of things, but that's the other thing. How does a car choose what it's going to hit? If it needs to avoid something in the road, and then there's people to one side and a building or a cliff on the other, it's a moral question that we're asking a vehicle to make. And then you're talking about the liability after it makes that decision. There's a lot of questions to be answered. And trust me, I hate driving. I used to love driving, but I hate it now. If I could get behind the wheel and just let the car do the work, I absolutely would. But I think you're right. I think we are a long way off of making this a reality. The Jetsons aren't as close as we thought.
No, and you know what? I don't even like anyone else driving. If I'm in a car, I usually like to drive. I drive sometimes with the old lady, and I swear to God, I want to get a crash helmet or something. So, you know, it's just insane letting a robot run it. No way. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, I am typically the driver. I trust my wife a little more. My wife sounds more like you. I swear, if I tap the brakes, her hand automatically goes out to brace herself like we're about to roll over. I tell her, just bury your nose in a book or your phone and leave me alone. Just let me get us there. 888-574-2723. Obviously, if I were a pedestrian, I would prefer a driverless car to choose not to hit me. But if its prime directive is to save the occupants of its car and a giant tractor trailer pulls out in front of it, am I just collateral damage to that machine? But then again, what would a human do anyway? You know, how do you value life? At least with people, I guess we can chalk it up to an accident. But if there is a car with four people traveling north and a driverless car, and then a semi pulls out with a human driver getting from east to west, and the car swerves west, and in order to avoid that truck, hits a pedestrian who's on the sidewalk on the west, killing that pedestrian. If its prime directive is to save the occupants of the car, then that's only one death, right? Numbers-wise, that seems acceptable. Except to the person and the family of the person who's just walking on the sidewalk. So, pedestrians get priority. So then what does that car do? The driverless car hits the brakes as best it can, plows into the side of the semi, killing two, maybe all four. Obviously, that is a bigger body count. But it didn't sacrifice anyone that wasn't directly involved. Now, these are all conceptual and questions, and but these are things that you have to wonder about. What decisions do these vehicles make? Now, the true hope is that once everything's automated, that they're... I mean, just look at an Amazon warehouse. Those things zip around and they're fine at all times. So if everything was automated, that would be one thing. But we have the human interaction with the automation on the roads, which just seems troubling to me. And I don't think you can use sheer numbers when it comes to how it's going to work. Because then if you add a sidewalk on the other side and the car can go left or right, and on one side there's three people, on the other side there's five, well, you would say then three is less than the four in the car and five on the side, so we'll just have to hit the three. But what if there's a child with the three? Does that weigh any differently? It's enough to keep you up at night. And don't even get started on, I mentioned the Jetsons. Flying cars should never, I think Musk even said this, Elon Musk, should never, ever, ever happen. I mean, you lose a hubcap on a car and it rolls down the street. Or I've seen tires fly off. They can cause damage. Can you imagine somebody dropping like a Coke can from the skies while you're walking around? Human beings should never, ever, ever be flying around. We always talk about jetpacks and, well, we'll all have jetpacks. Can you imagine the collisions that would happen in midair if we're all flying around like Boba Fett and the Rocketeer with, you know, coffee in one hand and our smartphones in the other? People will be dropping from the sky. Sometimes, and I'm a fan of technology, but sometimes maybe the old ways are the best ways.